Our final speaker, Mr. Fouad Mahdi, is Executive Director of Radical Middle Way, founding editor of Q News, as well as a freelance journalist. He comes from Mombasa in Kenya, graduated in economics in Nairobi, came to the UK in 1983 with a Reuters fellowship, and then graduated in journalism from City University and started his career working in many media companies, International Islamic News Agency, Associated Press, Los Angeles Times, The Guardian, and the BBC. And it's one of the most connected people I know, really. Fouad.
Your Grace, Chairman, respected elders, venerated leaders, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. I would like first to express my thanks to the Archbishop for giving me this opportunity to speak today. Knowing how important the agenda of poverty and its alleviation is to him makes this a very special occasion. There are many achievements for which history will remember Dr. Rowan Williams. The most enduring will perhaps be his commitment to interfaith engagement and dialogue, as well as the freshness and integrity he has brought to the agenda. For that, we thank you. Also, it is his concern about the affairs of those who are less fortunate, and his passion about what the rest of society is doing or not doing, that is the most striking feature of his tenure at Lambeth Palace. His clarity and leadership in these areas have benefited all sensible people of faith and no faith. Knowing the Archbishop has got his consequences. In November 2008, I was diagnosed with a heart condition. In a very short time, 2 weeks, I found myself registered in the hospital to do a bypass. It had nothing to do with the efficiency of the NHS. I was told that I was lucky, that most people cancel such major operations near Christmas, preferring to do it after, because they want to have their last Christmas. The operation was scheduled on the 23rd of December, 2 days before Christmas. The hospital chaplain came to see me, and in the conversation, I name dropped, and he just happened to be, like me, a great fan of the Archbishop. We had a very good conversation. I went into the operating table, lost conscious. I woke up literally on Christmas Eve. I was woken up hearing a choir singing Christmas carols and a soft voice holding my hand saying, "I knew you'll enjoy this." My first impression was, "I'm dead." And somebody has made a mistake. I'm on the wrong side of the wrong paradise. For I would be more expecting 73 virgins than 12 choir boys. My first encounter with dire poverty took place when I was a teenager, still at university. I volunteered to work with a charity in the northern part of my native Kenya, in a small town in Wajir in the mid-70s. The place was devastated by drought and security concerns. Refugee camps were overflowing, but aid was a political issue, and people, especially children, were dying literally like flies. It was a traumatic experience that shook the very foundations of my being. Yes, I could always go back to our tent and have my fill of water and food, but there were parts of me which I could not nourish, parts which wanted to know why. Parts that felt so hopelessly helpless, parts that were numbed, that wanted to shut out what I was witnessing and, to a certain extent, what I was concluding. There, amongst the sobs of children, many were too weak to cry, the blank stare of mothers who had nothing to give, and fathers who avoided all eye contact because they did not want to share the sense of shame they felt for something they could do nothing about. There, among this wretched of the earth, I thought I'd find God. Instead, I found myself and the route to God. It is in situations like my experience in Kenya that faith can nurture and strengthen the healer, the helper. For almost every religion teaches us that in those who are desperate and in those who are poor, one finds the divine. It means that a person of faith can perceive in such human tragedy profound insights that perhaps someone from a more secular background may miss. In our faith communities, we also build into our lives training to try to understand poverty better and time to share our lives meaningfully with those who are poor. So, for example, embedded in the world's faith are periods of physical self-denial, testing out the experience of poverty, be it during Ramadan or Lent. Equally, every high festival, be it Christmas, Yom Kippur, or Eid, is focused on sharing time and riches with our poor neighbors. It is an essential part of the festival. So we have something unique to say about poverty and justice. But let me tell you a story with a different message. In 1984, while reporting the biblical famine that was taking place in Ethiopia, I was shocked to find out that the year was also one of the best in terms of coffee exports. We need the cash to pay our international debt, I remember a government official telling me in Addis Ababa. We cannot eat coffee, a starving man told me in one of the refugee camps. On this occasion, I did not reach for divine inspiration in the way I did in Kenya. Here, I looked for knowledge generated largely elsewhere in the secular world about economics and the imperfections in markets that leave the vulnerable hungry when there is in fact plenty. I had a lot to learn from this world. Likewise, religious leaders around the world today accept the importance of secular knowledge in informing faith on matters of poverty. The Archbishop's inspiring sermon during the Queen's Diamond Jubilee is just one case in point. I tell these stories about Kenya and Ethiopia to highlight the different skills that the faith and secular worlds can bring to each other in understanding as well as transforming poverty and injustice. As a man of faith, I know that I do not have all the answers and need to learn from those of other faiths and those of no faith. In this regard, I am reminded of a man who fell off a cliff and barely managed to catch hold of a small bush. There was a great drop below him, and the top of the cliff was too far to reach. To make matters worse, the bush began slowly coming loose. At this moment, the man realized that he could rely on nothing but God. With a momentary perfect faith, he called upon the divine for help. A heavenly voice answered, "Let go of the bush." Silent for a moment, the man cried out, "Is there anyone else up there I could talk to?" I warmly embrace the partnership being offered by DFID document launched today. The principles on offer for relationships with faith communities transparency, mutual respect, and understanding can only enrich all of us and make us more effective in our work to challenge poverty. There is nothing to object to or fear from these principles. My concern is rather about the ability of faith and secular communities to negotiate and compromise, and more important, to understand each other. We may be living in times of information and knowledge transfer, but strangely enough, there are also times distinguished by lack of wisdom and inadequate skills to translate and decipher the knowledge. As people of faith, our challenge is to rediscover and share knowledge that has been developed and tempered by numerous trials and tribulations. Understanding that has been shaped by both our innate qualities as human beings and inspired by the desire to attain divine goals. Such knowledge and insights can be of tremendous value, not only to us in the faith world, but to those without our faith, who struggle with similar issues. As people of faith, we must grasp the opportunity that a new mood of openness and knowledge exchange is providing. But in order to succeed, it is imperative that we undergo change in both ourselves and in our assumptions. How do we do this? I believe that sometimes, particularly when working with secular agencies, we need new ways to express our learnings so that it can be heard in terms that is useful to non-believers. In these circumstances, we have to focus more on the success and utility of the ideas and learning that we offer, and less on their origins as revelations from God or the prophets. For their part, secular agencies will need to think hard about what they mean by mutual respect and understanding. In the developing world, for example, faith groups can be much more than deliverers of effective, and they will need to be respected beyond this role. We know a great deal, for example, about how to feel about poverty, about loving those who are rejected and poor. We are also tuned to learning a great deal from the poor, because in them we see God. I would challenge the Department for International Development to study, for example, what it can learn from the poor. As people of faith, it's top of our agenda. Is it on your agenda? If not, here is one way that we in the faith community can help you in your practice and understanding. The proposal I'm setting out here today of setting revelation and evangelism to one side in certain circumstances will be difficult for some people in many of the faiths present here. However, I see it as vital for the Muslim community, not only in this context of poverty and justice. We must learn to embrace and be heard about all relevant agendas, not limit ourselves merely to the narrower issues of religious practice and to being heard by only those who always listen to us. People of faith need to respond to what people want and demand. In most cases, this is unlikely to be in conflict with what God wants. Last month, for example, ANISA, a Muslim community organization, and my own organization, the Radical Middle Way, hosted a conference examining what 1,400 years of Islamic thinking can bring to enhancing modern notion of citizenship and public service. We will shortly publish a white paper on this issue. We will be sitting down, hopefully, with government officials and with government officers, politicians, and others interested parties to discuss our findings. We also want to bring the genius of Islamic scholarship to bear on other big issues and questions of the day, be it encouraging healthy living, lacking global warming, or removing the threat of nuclear weapons. None of this is about conversion. is all about convergence, on adding our thinking to collective global knowledge and bringing it to bear on the problems that face us all. We want to build a world in which ideas springing from faith and secular worlds can be exchanged with, as the DFID document rightly proposes, transparency, mutual respect and understanding. There is ample evidence that more and more people feel the same way and are looking for new sources for solutions. And whether driven by faith or a sensitive moral compass, there are many encouraging signs of people wanting to work together for the common good, with developments like the Millennium Goals galvanizing the concerns and goodwill across society. It is an approach whose time has come. We call it the Big Tent, where the world's big challenges and big ideas meet with the genius of faith. In future, we look forward to meeting everyone here today in the Big Tent to tackle our common goal, an end to poverty and injustice. Thank you very much.